I'm Johnny. I lead the team here in Mosaic Church. It's such a privilege to just be part of this church, to be part of this family together. And last week, we had Guy Miller come and preach. I thought it was outstanding. I just thought it was so good. So good. And so if you were not here, listen back. Go, and this is to plug our podcast now. Just go back and listen. Listen to all the talks that you miss. Do listen back. I think you're just going to be so blessed. And so he was in chapter 3, and we're going to be in chapter 4 of Nehemiah. Why don't you turn there in your Bible as you find that. I just want to ask, have you ever started like a project, or you've had this plan in your mind, I'm going to do this, And you think this is going to go really well, like a DIY project or like a fitness. You just got this fitness plan. I've got this idea. For me, it was these. I purchased these. If you look really closely, you'll be able to see the dust. I purchased these in about January. I left the gym that I was part of. And I thought, you know what, I'll save money, but I'll stay in peak condition, and I'll buy these. To say it started well, yeah, it started well, did about 4 months, 5 months in, I'm about 4 workouts with them. I don't know if you can relate to this at all, right? Like these projects that we often begin, we get really excited for. I'm going to stay trim. I'm going to stay this. I'm going to be buff. I'm going to get the roof done. I don't know what other DIY jobs there are. But these projects we start, we're enthusiastic. We're excited about them. But somewhere, and it often happens in the middle, like motivation just goes. Like this excitement goes, and it just drains us. And if we're honest, the same can happen in our Christian life. It's the reality, right? If we're honest, the same can happen. You start following Jesus. You're like, I love the church. The church is awesome. So good. All right, and nothing, like coming to every event, it's not a sacrifice. It's not difficult. You just love being there. And then opposition starts to come. And just the weariness of life starts to come. And as a result, your faith, it can start to feel a bit ordinary. Like Christianity becomes normal to you. Like there's preachers that just, oh, I don't really like that one. Didn't like that one. Don't like that preacher. That Johnny, awful. Right? And doubts, these doubts, they appear. You start to just doubt things in your own mind. You question those experiences you had of God years gone by. Like, are these even real? Did this really happen? And eventually you find yourself sometimes asking this question, how do I keep going? How do I keep going? How do I keep plugging away and going for it? Maybe this morning that's where you're at. You're at, how do I keep going? How do I keep going with this? And that's the question that we see in Nehemiah. We see that in chapter 4. Nehemiah 4 is going to really help us answer this a little bit. And so if you have not joined us recently, you might have joined us mid-series. And so just let me frame where we're at. Nehemiah, he's a very gifted administrator. And he has been leading the rebuilding of Jerusalem's walls. They'd all crumbled after they were taken captive, and he's been given permission to go back and build them and reconstruct those, and he's been leading the rebuild. And in chapter 3, what happens is the work has begun. The building of the walls it has begun, and then some people are trying to stop it. So in chapter 4, we're going to see how some people are just coming in and they're trying to stop it. And so you just imagine Nehemiah during that moment of people coming in and trying to stop what he's doing. Like, oh, how do I keep going? How do I keep doing this? How do we keep going? How am I? He's trying to invigorate the people to keep going and keep rebuilding. And so this morning, we're going to explore that question together as we work through the chapter. What we'll do, we'll read a bit. Talk a bit, read a bit, talk a bit. We'll do it that way. I hope that's okay. So let's go to Nehemiah chapter 4, and we're going to go from verse 1 to verse 6. When Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the walls, he became angry and was greatly incensed. He ridiculed the Jews, and in the presence of his associates and the army of Samaria, he said, "What are those feeble Jews doing? Will they restore their wall? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they finish in a day? Can they begin to bring stones back to life from those heaps of rubble, burned as they are? And then Tobiah the Amorite, who was at his side, he said, "What are they building? Even a fox climbing up on it would break down those walls. Hear us, O God, for we are despised. Turn their insults back on their own heads. Give them over as plunder in a land of captivity. Do not cover up their guilt or blot out their sins from your sight, for they have thrown insults in the faces of the builders." So we rebuilt the wall till all of it had reached half its height, for the people worked with all their heart. How do we keep going, first of all? How do I keep going when the noise gets loud? All right, Nehemiah, he's begun building. The building project, it has begun. And what happens is that Sanballat, he and Tobiah, they begin to verbally abuse the people. They begin to verbally abuse Nehemiah and co. And they verbally attack by saying, like, who are they? Those feeble Jews, who are they? And then you get, they're insulting their work. Even a fox, if a fox climbs up on that, that wall is done. Like, that's what they're saying to them. Can they bring stones back to life? Like, it just seems this is not possible. What you're doing is not going to be possible. You're crazy. You're ridiculous. You're feeble. You're useless. And so, through verse 1 to 3, what they're saying to Nehemiah and co. is that they're trying to rewrite Judah's story for them. They're trying to rewrite the story of what they're trying to build. And so they're saying, you're not capable. You're not going to last. This work is pointless. God is not going to come through for you. You're going to build this in a day? That's not possible. You can't do that. And there are still really loud voices like Sanballat and Tobias in our world today. Just something we need to be aware of, right? Voices are loud. The noise is loud. Right? They say things like this: the church is outdated and on the decline. Christians, they are not qualified to talk about truth. Look at what they are like. Well, if God was real, then the world would not look like this. As long as you're a good person, it doesn't really matter what you believe. And when we hear these things, when we get those accusations and mockery coming towards the heart of a Christian, it can hit really hard sometimes. Maybe those things I just said, you're like, oh, actually, he's got a point. It's because they can hit hard because there is some truth to it. Right? Mockery sometimes isn't necessarily laughter. Right? It's but more like an educated opinion, a cultural consensus of this isn't right. What I'm seeing in these Christians isn't right. And as Christians, we need to be aware that voices like this, they are not new. Right, the voices we hear in our culture today, the voices of Tobiah and Sanballat, they're nothing new, all right? They all go back to the question, the same question that the snake was asking Eve. Did God really say? Did God really say the church is the hope of the world? Is Mosaic Church really the hope of the world? Did God really say that? Did God really say build the church? Did God really say you are saved from all of your sin? Are you sure about that? Did God really say that he wants you to be with the people of God day in and day out? Did God really say that in this life you will have troubles, but take heart, I can overcome the world? Did he really say that? And so I ask you, when the voices get loud, who are you listening to? Who is it you're gonna listen to, right? Voices all around our culture. We see in verse 7, we haven't read it yet, but in verse 7, we're introduced to a few more people. And the point of that is that it goes, no, these are from the north, people from the south, people from the east, people from the west. These voices were all around Nehemiah. They came from every direction. There's voices all around us in our culture. There's those voices internally of, did God really say, does God really want me to live that way? Or we can choose to listen to the one who speaks truth only. All right? Voices and mockery shouldn't surprise Christians, right? They shouldn't surprise us, but they also shouldn't stop us living as Christians, right? And living for Jesus, living to build his church. Look at verse 6. So they've got oppressed, and then so we rebuilt till it had reached half its height, for the people worked with all their heart. Sometimes the application isn't super spiritual, but super simple. All right. Sometimes we need to get our head down and work with all our heart. All right. Sometimes we just need to be heart workers. All right. Are you doing that? Are you looking around to see in this church where you can serve, where you can be involved, where you can work? And in your workplace, are you doing that? Are you in that workplace thinking, where can I serve? Where can I love? Where can I be like Christ? Where are you heart working, or are you there moaning? Are you becoming just another voice that's bringing other people down? That's why life groups matter, right? Life groups matter because we need people speaking truth to one another. Because when the noise gets loud, we need someone to speak over it with truth. Right? We need people around us reminding us who God is when we begin doubting. That's what Nehemiah does in verses 4-5. He's coming to God. He's asking God to hold them. And he does it later on in the chapter as well. We need people helping us to remind us that God is at work. And God's work is worth continuing when we feel like down in tools, when we feel like, I don't know if I can keep going. And so when opposition mocks us, we need to work with all our hearts. That's what we're called to do, work with all our hearts. Let's read on a bit more. We're going to look at verse 7-14. But when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Amorites, and the people of Ashdod, all of those north, south, east, west, all of the people all around them, they heard that the repairs of the Jerusalem walls had gone ahead and that the gaps were being closed, they were angry. They got really angry again. It's filled with anger every single time. And they all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and stir up trouble against it. That isn't like, oh, we're just going to be a bit annoying, a bit mischievous, all right? They want to damage them. They want to knock that wall down. They want to knock them down. They would be okay to kill them, all right? But we prayed. But we prayed to our God and posted a guard day and night to meet this threat. Meanwhile, the people of Judah said, the strength of the laborers is giving out, and there is so much rubble that we cannot rebuild this wall. There was rubble there before, and the wall was being built, right? What's changed? Getting weary. Also, our enemies said, before they know it or see us, we will be right there among them and we'll kill them and put an end to their work. Then the Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times, wherever you turn, they will attack us. Therefore, I stationed some of the people behind the lowest points of the wall at the exposed places, posting them by families with their swords, spears, and bows. After I looked things over, I stood up and I said to the nobles, the officials and the rest of the people, don't be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome, and fight for your families, your sons and your daughters, your wives and your homes. Sometimes, just for a moment, picture the scene for a moment, all right? The builders are shattered, right? We read it, right? Their energy is giving out. They've got nothing left, right? They're working hard. They've been mocked and ridiculed for a really long time. Oh, you're not going to do this. It's a fox is going to jump on it. It's going to break it. Like, this is pointless. They've been hearing all that, and they're just so weary. And then what happens is it's not just words anymore. Like, these are threats. We're going to come and kill you. Right, this is not just verbal things anymore. It's gone from mockery to murderous. Right? They all plotted together to stir up trouble. And the result of all these threats has become so much for them. Right? It says in verse 10, the strength of the laborers is giving out. We cannot rebuild the walls. Notice that there is a danger. When we focus on opposition, fear begins to blur our field of vision. What is fear? Have you ever wondered, what is fear, right? Fear is a response. This is not something new, right? This isn't profound, right? Fear is a response to what we see and experience around us. It's just a response to that. And so we fear what is bigger, right, than us. So for example, if a lion ran through here, I'm first out, right? I'm okay to be afraid of a lion. I'm gone because it's bigger than me. It's stronger than me. It's going to rip my head off, right? See what I mean? Like, some fear is good. So we fear what is bigger. We fear what is able to shape our future as well. Right, that's why we fear job loss. That's going to shape my future. It's going to shape what I'm going through. We fear what is able to take something from us that we hold really deeply. That's why death, that's why so many people fear death, because it's something that's taken from us. Judah, right, the people here, they have become fearful because they can see and they are experiencing something that is bigger and stronger than them, a big group from every direction, north, south, east, and west, and it's going to shape their future, not in a way that's going to be very good. And they're going to take what deeply matters to them. What can we see around us? What do you see around you that you're looking at and you're just fueled into fear? What's the big, scary, difficult, painful, surprising thing that you can see around you? We all have fears, okay? Every single one of us, we have fears. They are natural, right? Fear is natural. However, I just want to point us to, what does Scripture say about fear, right? The beauty is the Bible never says don't fear, right? You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to fear. Well, instead, it tells us what to fear. In Isaiah 8, do not call conspiracy everything this people calls a conspiracy. Do not fear what they fear and do not dread it. The Lord is the one you are to regard as holy. He is the one you are to fear. It's a weird one. We are to fear God. We are to fear God. It's healthy. You ever thought that? Like, it's really healthy for us to fear God, to be fearful of him, not with a sense of anxiety, not with a sense of panic, not with a sense of worry, but in a sense of awe of his authority, of his wonder, of his greatness, of his majesty. And here's why it matters. Like, if we fear something more than God, it begins functioning like an idol in our lives. Whatever we look at most and fear will eventually shape our decisions, it will shape our hope, and it will shape our trust. What does Nehemiah encourage them to do? What does Nehemiah encourage them to do is when fear is taking over, when it's blurring their vision of what they see, what does he say to them? Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome. What happens when we fear God is that having a fear of God is healthy, because it takes whatever opposition we are facing, whatever is big, whatever is tough, whatever is going to take things from us, whatever is going to break things in us, right? It takes those things and it looks beyond that, right? It looks onto the one who is bigger than the big stuff. It looks beyond the one who is tough. It looks to the one who is not surprised by the surprising stuff. It helps us to look onto the one who comforts those who are broken. If we're fearful of being broken, beautiful verse, Psalm 56, and you have kept my tears in your bottle. Are they not in your book? Oh, stunning. Like, that's who God is. Right, he holds us so firmly. When we fear him, we know that he's going to comfort us because he's greater than our fears. Looking beyond the big stuff, etc., it doesn't mean that you just have to be passive. Oh, let go and let God. Right, that's just ridiculous. Right, because in verse 14, there is action. In verse 14, we see action. Fight for your family. Fight for your children. You need to go. And instead, I mean that when fear overwhelms, there is nothing safer. There is nothing more comforting than the fear of God, because we discover that remembering him is a reminder he remembers us. It's not to degrade any fears, all right? It's overwhelming. I'm not saying that. Instead, it is to raise our eyes to just see what God sees. If you are fearful of what is going on in your life, what is happening in your life at the moment, Nehemiah 4:14, remember the Lord, who is great and awesome. That's who he is. That's who he is. When fear blurs our vision, remember the Lord, who is great and awesome. What a privilege. Let's read to the rest of the chapter. When our enemies heard that we were aware of their plot and that God had frustrated it, we all returned to the wall, each one to our work. From that day on, half of my men did the work, while the other half were equipped with spears, shields, bows, and armor. The officers posted themselves behind all the people of Judah who were building the wall. Those who carried materials did their work with one hand and held a weapon in the other, and each of the builders wore his sword and his at his side as they worked. They built and they fought at the same time. They're building and fighting at the same time. But the man who sounded the trumpet, he stayed with me. Then I said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, the work is extensive, and it's spread out, and we are widely separated from each other along the wall. Whenever you hear the sound of the trumpet, join us there. Our God will fight for us. So we continued the work with half the men holding spears from the first light of dawn till the stars came out. And at the same time, I also said to the people, let every man and his helper stay inside Jerusalem at night so that they can serve as guards by night and workers by day. Do you see that? There's no rest. This is a moment for fighting. This is a moment of battle. This is a moment of building. They work in 24 hours. Neither I nor my brothers nor my men nor my guards with me took off our clothes. Each had his weapon, even when he went for water. When opposition comes, when difficulties come, when that question of how can I keep going comes, one of the most dangerous temptations is not just discouragement. We can easily feel discouragement through the voices and through fear, but it's isolation. Fear and exhaustion, they don't just make us want to stop work. They make us want to withdraw from people. From responsibility, from whatever God is calling us to. We can sometimes have this temptation to become lone rangers. Are you feeling that today? Maybe you recognize that instinct and you're tempted to be a bit of a lone ranger. Like that moment when you're feeling like, how do I keep going? Maybe you just feel, I just need to step back from this at the moment. I just need to step away. I need to cope alone. I need to do this on my own. I need to disappear really quietly so no one knows. I need to think, I'll just get through this myself. And you might just want to be alone and hide and run from it all. I just imagine Nehemiah going, I could really do with a day off. I could really do with just people stop moaning about where the cement's gone. Like, that would just be great. I could imagine him just wanting to do that, just running away. And the people as well. Oh, seriously, I just want to sit in my house. Do I really have to keep like cementing this same? What was just a wall? Like, it can feel like that. Nehemiah shows us God never intended his people to build or battle alone. All right, look with me, all right? The turning point in this chapter is verse 15 to 20. All right, it happens as Nehemiah is organizing the people. Right, so they're all a bit scattered, they're all a bit everywhere. It's got a bit crazy because of all these murderous intents, all right? And it's all happened And they've got this temptation, really, to be a lone ranger. We all returned to the wall, each one to his own work. There is a temptation there. I'm just building my thing. I'm building my house. I'm building my space. I'm building my faith. I'm building me as a Christian. All right? It can so easily do that. And then we read on, later on, it says, whenever you hear the sound of the trumpet, join us there. So we're building our little bit, right? We've got to just keep going. I've just got to build. But when you hear the trumpet, what do? You gather. You go. All right? The builders, they're spread across. All right? They're vulnerable. They're separated. They're exposed. They're tempted to be lone rangers. But when the trumpet sounds, we gather. We go there. We're there. We want to be there because often it'll mean you're going to have to fight. You're going to have to battle. You're going to get your sword out. When the pressure rises, God's people are not called to run, to be lone rangers, to leg it. All right? That's not what we're called to do, but to gather together, to be together, to fight together. And how much do we do the opposite? All right? Seriously, how much do we do the opposite? How many people here are like, oh, man, I'm feeling so drained. I feel spiritually low. Circumstance of life is just so heavy and on my mind. I can't deal with this. I don't think I'm going to get to church. Being at church is the best place for you in that moment. There is no better place to be. Or you feel that way and you're like really strong and stoic, and so you come to church and you sit and you pretend to love Jesus when deep down you're just like, oh, this is really hard and frustrating and I don't know if I can carry on. And so you're holding it all together rather than just sharing with your life group leaders, the people around you that you trust, and going, it's really hard right now. I'm really struggling right now. We so often do the opposite of the trumpet sounding and gathering. We go, the trumpet sounds, I'm off. Right? The painful bit, the opposition's coming, I'm off, I'm gone. Toby started the meeting with this verse, actually. He didn't know what I was doing, but this verse. In Hebrews 10, spur one another on towards love and good deeds. Do not give up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another. The application this morning is quite simple, all right? It is to gather and fight. To gather and fight. Get in that habit that it talks about in Hebrews of gathering together. Right, if you feel the temptation this morning, if you are feeling that temptation, I've just got to retreat, life is heavy, life is hard, this building stuff is really not doing me good, I feel like that, right? The option is to gather. Right? If you're feeling that temptation, my prayer this morning is that you get a habit like that of Hebrews 10, of gathering with God's people. We see in verse 15, every single person has got a role. Right, there is no lone rangers here. Right, they're building their bit, but there's no lone rangers. Right, some of them did some building, some did some guarding, some did some carrying. Right, that sounds like a hard job, but really quite essential and really simple. Can you do that? Can you just carry things? Oh, yeah, I can. Well, from there to I'll carry that. Right, they've all got something to do. They're gathering around. Some of them led. Some of them just. Some of them just sounded a trumpet. All right, some of them have got spears, while some of them have got swords, while some of them have got shields. Some of them are in the morning, some of them are in the evening, some of them are probably doing both because they're really cool, right? But the build and the fight, it was happening all at the same time. It's happening all the time, and everyone had a task together. They were on mission together. And so I just want to ask you, what is your role in the wall-building project of Mosaic? Where do you need to just reprioritize church in your life? Make it more important to gather. Where do your gifts and abilities need to be released to bless other people, to support the gathered people? Where do you need to do that? Well, I just want to really be harsh but loving at the moment, right? Did you know there are people in kids' work who are serving on kids' work who have done so for the last 4 weeks. They've not heard a sermon for the last 4 weeks because they have been looking after and discipling other people's children. I love those guys. We want to honor those people. we also want to say that that's not okay. That's not gathered. That's not running to the trumpet sound. Right, there are over 30 kids every single week who are being discipled. Why wouldn't you not want to get involved in that? Why would you not want to teach people about Jesus and help them to love him more? What a privilege. What an opportunity we've got. In faith, I am expecting people after this morning to go and chat to Mel Charlton and say, I'd love to be part of kids or youth or minis. I'd love to just serve in that space. Maybe that's you. Maybe you just feel burdened with that. For others, it might be other places, but I just feel that that's a really essential one right now. So where's your place in the war? But the other application of gather is to fight. Right? We're fighting by going into kids' work and building them up and helping them to love Jesus more. And so when I'm saying fight, we can get this image of like, well, we need to get some swords out, we need to do some killing. Right? That's not what I'm saying. All right? What I mean by that is not aggression. All right, but it's what we see in verse 17 and 18. Notice in verse 17 and 18, as they built, they constantly were ready for moments when opposition came. They were constantly ready for it in verse 17 and 18. Those who carried materials, right, just imagine this for a moment. Those who carried materials did their work with one hand and held a weapon in the other. Like, spear that way and like, cementing here. Yeah, just it's that, all right? I joke about it a little bit, but each of the builders, they wore a sword. They had to be ready. They had to know that they are in a spiritual battle. You and I, we are in a spiritual battle. And so I just ask you, are you ready to fight? All right, are you ready to fight in prayer and sacrifice for one another, for the gathered people? Are you ready to fight for the souls of your family in prayer? Are you ready to fight for your marriage by serving like Christ? Are you ready to fight for your faith by prioritizing church? Are you ready to fight for the gospel by choosing God's kingdom values than your own? Are you ready? Are you building and fighting? Are you building and fighting? Are you gathering and fighting? So I don't know about you, but some of this is hard work. Right, that was definitely hard work for those people, right? And it can feel like, well, I don't know if I can actually keep going. All right, you're telling me, I'm asking the question, how do I keep going? And you're saying, well, you got to fight and you got to gather, you got to be there, you got to do all these things, you got to hear God more, you got to fear God more, you got to do all those things. But here's the encouragement, right? God is aware of our failings in trying to keep going. He's aware of it. We know we are not lone rangers because we build for God, but we are building with God. That's the beautiful truth of the whole of Nehemiah. This is not about what we do. It's about who we are building and fighting and going for. Right, we're doing this with God. Nehemiah is clear in this book. It's God's work. I don't know the numbers, but I'm going to make some up. So don't hold this to fact, right? Nehemiah is mentioned, say, 20 times, his name. God's mentioned hundreds of times. Hundreds of times. This is God's book. This is God's building. This is God's work. This isn't Nehemiah's work. This isn't Nehemiah's project. This is God's project. Same in Mosaic Church. This is not Johnny's church. This is not Mosaic Church. This is God's church. This is God's work. Nehemiah, he's clear through his whole book. In verse 4, he's praying. Who to? He's praying to God. In verse 9, he's praying. What's he doing in verse 14? He's reminding them, no, remember God. Remember him. It's all about him. And that's the reason behind why the people, do you notice the people in verse 10 are like, we can't rebuild the wall. They say that. We cannot rebuild this wall. We can't do this. I'm so tired, Nehemiah. I'm so done. And then in verse 21, they're pulling all-nighters. What's happened? What's changed in them? All right, it's because they were reminded that this building project is God's project. It's not theirs. It's not Nehemiah's special little side project, side hustle. All right? Verse 20, Our God will fight for us. I hope you just begin to see God is the great rebuilder. God is the one who builds with us so that we can keep going. Right? Unlike Nehemiah, Jesus didn't merely face just some mockery from a distance, from people from the north going, "You're not going to do it. You can't do it." They came so close that they hit him and they spat on him. Right? The voices around the cross when Jesus is dying on a cross could not have been louder. Take yourself down. You can do it. Right? If you're the Son of God, you can do that. Did God really say? Jesus knew true loneliness. He's in the garden. He's like, "God, will you take this cup from me? I'm all alone. My God, why have you forsaken me?" He knew loneliness, but he also said, "But your will be done. I'm going to fight." He didn't go it alone. He knew God was there with him. We're going to take communion now, and the band can come up. But during that moment, I want you to use it as an opportunity to reflect. I want you to go deep. All right, where have the voices been loud for you? Where has fear narrowed your vision? Where have you tried to just carry things alone and burdens alone? Right? Use this as an opportunity for that. Remember our God, who is great and awesome. Our God fights for us. If you're not sure, you are coming to the physical table, a physical table of bread and wine, of grape juice. All right, we're coming to the cup and the bread, physical nature of beautiful spiritual truths. He has won. It's his victory. It's his wall. If you are fearful and you are wanting to give up, right, this is an opportunity to respond in a physical way to a spiritual truth that our God is fighting for us and he has won. Amen? Why don't we stand? What I want us to do, really simple. Don't worry about putting the cups back after. Simon will hate me for saying that. But don't. All right, once you've drunk it, you just put it near you, all right? And you can put it back at the end of the meeting, okay? Don't worry about moving the cups. What I want you to do, I want us to go to the communion table. I want you to get a bit of bread and the grape juice, the wine, and I want you to bring it back to your seat. And then when you bring it back to your seat, I want you to really simply, if we can keep that up, is that all right? I just want you really simply to just remember God. That's all I want us to do. And just, you can, it, to help you, right? Look at the bread and look at the wine. If you're struggling, how can I remember God? Oh, it's right here in front of me in my hands. Why don't you for a moment do that? And then I'll pray and we'll worship God. But just want that moment. So why don't we head to the table, grab the bread and the wine, and just sit back down. You can stand, you can kneel, you can sit. I don't mind how you do it. And the band could get, you can help yourself to bread and wine as well. God, as we look at the bread and the wine, as we look at it, I just pray for those people in this room just overwhelmed by fear right now, to know that it was destroyed and won on the cross, that your victory on the cross is enough for us. Lord, will we look at this communion now and know we are not fighting for anything else but the people to know the blood and body broken for them on the cross. Lord, I pray for people to know that. That's what we're fighting for. We're fighting for people to know the gospel's beauty and depth. I pray, Lord, for people to take their position in the wall. if they're saying this bread and this wine is for me, then they will take their position in the wall. They'll say, no, I'm here to serve. I'm here to gather around the person of Jesus, however that looks. Lord, I do just pray for us as people right now in this moment, that people will remember the Lord. We don't just remember the things you do. We remember who you are, that you are great and awesome. And if we ever doubted it, right now in our hands is an example of the greatest and most awesome moment in all of history. God comes down, lives, dies, resurrects back to life, taking us with him into glory. What a privilege, what a pleasure, oh God. Transform our hearts, we pray, oh God. Why don't we take communion together now? Let's eat and drink of the cup. Let's take it together.